This is Radio Free Brooklyn, and you're listening to Brooklyn Player. I'm your host, Veronica Newton. Every month, I'm going to be interviewing Brooklyn-based musicians. If you listen to this show, it's a great way to check out new music and hear a conversation with an interesting artist. Coming up this hour, I have eclectic tracks to play because today I'm speaking to Simon Jerman. He's an Irish musician now based in Brooklyn who plays electric bass and guitar. I saw Simon's band Trotamouse play at a Skrull record release party not too long ago. They were amazing. Here's one of the tracks from that album, The Pictorial Atlas of Mammals. Thank you. track is called Lean and is composed by Simon.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for asking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you have a lot going on right now, a lot of fantastic projects, but I wanted to talk about the latest Trotamouse album, which just came out recently. So it's Pictorial Atlas of Mammals is the name of the album. And it's you on electric bass, and you composed everything. Ingrid Laubrock on tenor sax, Matt Maneri on viola, and Tom Rainey on drums. Tell me a little bit about making this album and this particular ensemble.
Sure. This is actually the second Trotamouse record. There was another one in 2000. I think in 2008 on this other label, Fresh Sound, and it was a completely different lineup. It was with it was Chris Speed and Lauren Stillman, and Joachim Badenhorst and Sean Carpio. The reason that I wanted to keep the name was because the idea, even though the personnel is different, the idea is pretty similar, in that it was supposed to be, even though the roles get a little bit blurred, two or three melodic instruments. And then me being part of a rhythm section, playing, like on the first one, it's four string bass and guitar, and some baritone guitar. And one, it's all six string bass, but sort of providing bass function, but having it be a little bit blurry, like who's doing what. But so this one, for this record, the band has been together for a few years, but we've kind of only worked sporadically. Even though the record just came out a few months ago, we recorded in 2012.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it just took a while to get it all organized, mixed and mastered, and I did an Indiegogo campaign to raise some money for it.
Yeah, that takes a while to produce it and get it out, and every step along the way.
Yeah, there's so many steps. And so by the time, like now, the gigs that we've played recently are pretty different from, well, they're not, they're a bit looser than the album. Like the album is very, each tune is very clear what's what. And on the gigs, we've generally just played a set straight through, and played less written material and improvised our way in and out of things.
Fantastic.
So that's been really nice. So of the three of them, I've known Ingrid the longest.
Nice.
Before I moved here, I played with her, or I visited London a bunch to play, and she lived there, and we didn't play, but we met there. And so I knew about her, and then I knew Tom. I've known Tom and Matt's playing since I was in college, I guess, you know.
Right.
So it was a slow thing of putting it together, but then when I did, I realized it was like kind of like a dream band, you know.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. And it's great to hear you guys play live too.
Oh, thanks.
Too. Yeah. So if anyone listening has a chance to hear the band play live, it's a great experience.
Yeah, and there's a few things coming up. We're playing in Corazon, in Park Slope on January 26th.
Great.
And we're playing in Rye in Williamsburg on March 16th.
Fantastic.
They're a little bit away, but they're coming.
No, that's good. That's great.
Yeah.
Perfect. Beautiful. So tell me about the name of the band, Trotamouse.
It's a phrase that I always heard growing up, and I thought it was a common phrase in Ireland, but it turns out it's not. It's a phrase that my mother would often say, and she got it from her mother, and they're both from Athlone, like the Midlands in the centre of the country. And it's a phrase used, it's where if you leave a tea bag and a cup of tea for too long, people would say you could trot a mouse on that tea because it gets so thick. And I just always thought it was a nice image.
Definitely.
Of something getting really thick like that. And for a long time, I really liked drinking tea that way also. So.
A nice strong cup of tea.
Yeah. So that was the reason for that. And then Pictorial Atlas of Mammals is like two of the of song titles, the two improvised things, are all little references from Haruki Murakami novels. There's, I forget which one it is, but there's a reference to a character taking out a book from a library called Pictorial Atlas of Mammals, and I just thought it was a nice, another nice
definitely image,
just like an evocative little bunch of words.
And how did you put together the arrangement of I Saw My Lady Weep? Because I loved seeing you play that live, and I love hearing it on the album too.
Thanks. Well, that one and Flow My Tears are both these John Dowland compositions. And he was alive in the Renaissance. People say that he was English, but there's speculation that maybe he was even Irish. I think that's unlikely. But, you know, I live in hope. I think he worked a lot in Denmark as well. And he was best known for writing music for lute and voice. He was a great lutenist. And they're all like these very long melodies with extremely melancholy lyrics. And these really beautiful, intricate lute parts. Mm. And so, like, years ago, I played in this group where we interpreted some of those songs. And the songs that we played were for... They were originally written for a quartet. I think the original instrumentation was viola da gamba, recorder, lute, and voice. But we replaced viola da gamba with bass clarinet and... recorder with violin, and then I played the lute parts on electric guitar.
Oh, nice.
And it took so long to learn them because they're so intricate, but just playing them and listening to that music a lot, it kind of really stayed with me, and I wanted to try to do it in an improvised setting. And so the sort of compromise was to sort of throw out the lute parts and either just reduce the harmony to something very simple or kind of abandon the harmony and just take the melody. So Flow My Tears, we're still playing the harmony, but without all the inner voices. And for Saw My Lady Weep, it's really just the melody. And then I wrote this little tag at the end, this little extra section that we could just stick on to that. And on the gigs, we've been sticking that extra section onto either of the Dowland tunes. It kind of works for both.
Nice, nice.
But yeah, but they're just like really beautiful, long, through-composed melodies.
They are, and they still have this melancholy quality, but they're so beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting contrast with the rest of your set list, too. Because it's like, whoa!
Yeah.
You know, kind of a really different take, distilling down these songs.
Yeah. I think it's nice to... Like, it's nice to find... I mean, I don't know if it's successful or not, but like to try to find ways, like an honest way of engaging with different kinds of traditions, like with older music, you know? And so of course we're not being true to the tradition that music is played in, but there's something very kind of like weirdly fulfilling about engaging with something from so long ago, but that feels really kind of, at least to me, feels relevant now. Like, that music doesn't sound dated or anything when I hear it, you know, it sounds super modern.
Yeah, it really pulls me in, definitely.
Yeah.
It's really something really intriguing about it. What else do you have coming down the pike?
Well, I've been working for the last, I guess, almost 6 months on these solo pieces. I got a grant from this foundation in Northern Ireland called the PRS for Music Foundation. So they provide a grant and a group in Dublin called the IMC applied for it on my behalf. And I was able to commission three composers to write tape pieces. So like pieces kind of in the same world as the electric counterpoint, that Steve Reich piece, where it's multi-track. Multi-tracked either guitar or electric bass, and then me playing a live part. So I got two New York composers, Caleb Burans and David Kroll, and one Northern Irish composer, Frank Lyons, and they've all written these pieces, and I've just been trying to learn them and record all the parts that I'll play along to live for months. And next week, I'm gonna do the gigs.
Next week, that's exciting. That's it is great. Exciting.
It's a little bit stressful because the first gig is at the London Jazz Festival, so I'm really. I think it'll be fine. But there's still a few last minute adjustments being made.
Right. So it's polishing it up and then putting it out there immediately.
Yeah, basically. I did a tryout concert here at Spectrum a couple of weeks ago and played three of the four pieces. And that was easier than I thought it would be in a way because so much work had gone into it. Good. So that was kind of a relief. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited to do it. It's a good challenge.
Very cool. That's so beautiful. Love it.
Yeah, and the composers wrote really beautiful and really different things. So I think it'll be interesting just like doing the program a few nights in a row and seeing how the compositions sit together. Because sometimes it's sort of a, you know, my initial inclination was to see how could I make all these different things sort of work together. But then I was talking to a friend of mine and he was saying, maybe you shouldn't make any attempt to make them fit together. Just let them sit on their own and be what they are.
Yeah.
So I haven't fully figured that out yet.
Wow. So this week you're going to be making decisions, doing this, the last...
Yeah.
Polishing and adjusting and
yeah, and then, wow.
and then head up to London.
Yeah. Then it's three gigs and then a little break and then two gigs with two different groups in Portugal. At this festival in Porto. And they're all musicians that I've worked with before in different contexts. But because it's a festival, it just happens to work out that the two groups will be playing on consecutive nights.
That's great.
So it works out great. And then back here for December.
Fantastic.
So they're exciting things.
Definitely. Definitely. 6 months of work or more, right?
Coming. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think, is it? It's at least 6 months. Yeah.
Because also with the grant process and all of that.
Yeah. I mean, including that, it's probably more like a year, you know. And lots of back and forth with the composers and trying things and reevaluating them and also just trying to figure out how to play what somebody else has written. Two of the pieces, they don't sound difficult at all, but they were enormously challenging. Like one of them, I just thought at a certain point,
it's not gonna work.
I just can't play it, you know. And now that I can, it's funny to look back and think that I couldn't. But I think when people hear it. I mean, it's written in this very natural, organic kind of way that you wouldn't... It doesn't sound like it's willfully difficult, you know? It's just...
Deceptively difficult.
Yeah, I think so.
No, it's an incredible process to take something off the page.
Yeah.
And then bring that fully to life.
Yeah. That's a challenge.
It's not an instantaneous thing of... It's... Reading it, did you have to do some arranging and?
I didn't really. I mean, it was all the arrangements were pretty set, because there's not a lot of improvising really. The ratio of improvised to composed is definitely veers more towards the composed than a lot of things that I do, and also because most of the time if I'm playing somebody's music. 90% of the time they're in the group,
right. Yeah. So you can bounce it off, talk to them, have this easy interaction.
You can have that, but also I think often the kind of, I mean, I don't know if everybody feels this way, but often I have the impression at least that if you're in an improvising group or a jazz group or whatever with people and they bring in a composition, would most, I mean there are exceptions of course, but oftentimes, the music is brought in by the composer, who's often the band leader. And then once you've played it a little bit, it kind of feels like it's everybody's to an extent. And people can make bold decisions. And whether they're successful or not, that's accepted. That's just sort of part of the process. It's a living, evolving thing. And that's not untrue with these things, with these pieces, but there's a different, it's a different dynamic where it's like a more a new music situation where somebody's written something for you and you're trying to interpret it as yourself, but it is their music and you want to be true to their intention and not kind of throw it out the window and just, you know,
do your own thing.
Yeah. So it's like, it's a good, yeah, it's a balancing. I mean, it's really, it's great. I like it, but it's certainly not the thing that I usually do, you know?
Right. Right. Plus the, that it's a solo performance too is,
yeah. Yeah. So there's
a different dynamic.
Definitely. Yeah. Less people to try to blame if it doesn't go well. And solo, I'd done some solo stuff before and made a recording, but it was mostly improvised. And that has its own challenges playing live, just improvising from scratch. So I'm kind of seeing both sides of the same thing.
Right. Yeah. Right. What brought you to music? How did you start playing?
I think when I was probably about seven, in primary school, in second class, I don't know how that equates to the grade system here.
I think that's about the same. Second grade would be about seven.
You'd be about seven? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
The woman who's my teacher also taught guitar, and my parents said, you know, if you want to learn an instrument, and they kind of arbitrarily said, you can pick piano or guitar, which I'm surprised at, because a piano would have been a big thing to get, and the guitar was much less so.
Right.
But for whatever reason, I chose guitar, and liked it and played it for a bit, and then took a little break when I was nine, and then went back again because the teacher I had in sixth class was also a guitar teacher, and he played electric guitar, which was kind of exciting. And just played it, you know, throughout my teenage years, studied classical guitar and started to play some electric bass as well, and got really into jazz music. And then at a certain point realized, you know, that I was way more interested in that than other stuff.
Right.
And so decided to pursue it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And what brought you from Ireland to you? Were you in London or?
No, I was, it was, well, I mean, I've been here for 6 years now. And right before I came here, I was in Dublin for 2.5 years. But before that, I was in Europe for, I think, about 7 years.
Oh.
So I left Dublin really when I was 19. Because, I mean, at the time when I finished high school, like, you couldn't really, you could study jazz, but it was a 2-year diploma course. And they let me go into the second year, and then I was done and I was 19. And I couldn't play or anything, it's just that's all that
was offered.
Yeah. So the guy who ran that course suggested, because, I mean, even now it's overwhelming.
It is. You know? Totally is, yeah.
Yeah, so it was kind of a roundabout way of coming here. I mean, I probably visited here, existed, and thankfully got in, because if I didn't, I don't know what I would have done. And so I was in Holland for 5 years. And that was studying guitar, not bass, because it was a very traditional school, and electric bass, you couldn't study electric bass.
Hmm.
So was there for 5 years, and that was great. Most of the students were international. There was a weird thing where if you were from an EU country, you paid very, very low fees at the beginning of the year, and then you had them refunded to you at the end of the year. But if you were Dutch, you paid full fees.
Ouch.
It was a weird system. So it wasn't very encouraging for Dutch people.
No.
But
great if you were in the EU.
Yeah, and great, a great way to meet tons of musicians from all around Europe. So I did that for 5 years. And then visited New York during that time and really liked it and really wanted to come here. And so much of what I was listening to was from here.
Mm.
And felt much more attracted to that and the history of all the music from New York than from a lot of other places. But, you know, it's very difficult to move here, or it felt like that at the time. So I had a girlfriend at the time who was Icelandic, and I liked a lot of music from Iceland too. And I took this lesson here with Drew Rest, the bass player, and I was like talking to him about the idea of coming here or going somewhere else first, or just how to
make it happen.
Yeah. And he said, this was really good advice, I think, in retrospect. He said, if you're the kind of person that can sort of, I don't know how you put it, like if you kind of compartmentalize and isolate yourself a little bit, then, you know, if you're interested in finding your own voice, which I was, you know, you can do that in New York. But for a lot of people, you can be overwhelmed with possibilities and information, and it can be hard to follow your own thing. But if you live somewhere with a smaller scene for a period, it can be easier to focus before coming somewhere like this. And so partially because of that, and partially because of the seemingly insurmountable difficulties involved in getting a visa and stuff, went to Iceland for a year. And it was great because it was a smaller scene and it was a big break from jazz school. You know, it was just a different world of like pop music and electronic music and improvised music.
Yeah, it's a pretty vibrant music scene.
Yeah.
Happening.
Yeah, and just for such a small place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really helpful to just think about what I really wanted to do and what I was interested in.
Well, you had some good guidance from the teacher suggesting The Hague.
Yeah.
When you were really like, I don't know, you know, where do I go study? And then that's great advice about not just diving into New York when you don't quite, maybe you weren't quite ready for that stage.
I'm sure. Yeah. And it was during that year in Iceland that I wrote all the music for the first Trotamouse record. But at the same time, I knew lots of people. And I think it's a very, at least the scenes that I feel part of, it's pretty open and welcoming, you know. So it's kind of easy to meet people and feel involved, you know. Because the stories you hear or I heard before moving here was just like, you know, it's cutthroat and people will be, you know, it sounded horrific.
I think it's all different for bass players.
Maybe.
It is for every other instrument, but people need bass players. They really do.
That's true. Although, not everybody wants a six-string electric bass player playing with pedals.
This is true.
And I don't blame them. But, yeah, no, maybe there's some truth in that, though. You know, the instrument you play probably does have an effect on some of that stuff.
Let's listen to Veins and Arteries by Briars of North America.
Once I had veins and arteries, but now I live in a far-off sea. Now I'm
how did you make the leap from Iceland to New York? So you made these long trips and you got the lay of the land.
I ended up going back to Dublin for 2 years before I came here. And I really wanted to come here, but I just wasn't really sure how to do it or what the best thing to do was, really. And thought I should see how it is in Dublin, you know. And it ended up just being sort of like an extension of the time in Iceland, and that I was really focused on figuring out my own stuff. And it was right around then that I was really very much starting to play as much or more bass than guitar. It'd been mostly guitar up until I got to Iceland.
I was wondering that too.
It was all a bit blurry and confused, you know. And there was a real battle between which one, and I felt more comfortable playing certain kinds of situations on the bass and others on the guitar. And part of that was just to do with, you know, things that were lacking in how I played one or the other. And part of it was to do with probably just, you know, what you're naturally attracted towards. So it was like a 4-string bass, and then I added baritone guitar. It was electric guitar, then adding 4-string bass, then getting a baritone guitar and detuning it and having it sort of be in the middle. And then finally figuring out that a 6-string bass might be sort of the happy medium between it all.
Right. That's going to be the sound you want. And the...
Yeah. And it keeps more like a lot of possibilities open. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I've had the weird experience of playing 4-string bass on a gig and saying to the people I was playing with afterwards, you know, it's funny to do this with the 4-string, and they didn't even notice.
What?
You know, they were like, oh, I didn't notice. And the same thing even with guitar. I did a thing on guitar and said, you know, it's different doing this on guitar. I mean, it was an improvised thing, but people, you know,
It the down-tuned guitar?
No,
it was just the regular.
But it's kind of the same. I mean, it's the same person. It's the same language.
Yes.
The same ideas.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm much more interested in that, really, than sort of being super obsessed with the instrument and the gear and the, you know, it's more like the intention.
Yeah, I mean, that can be a whole rabbit hole, right? That you fall into the gear and...
Definitely.
You can just go on and on and on with that.
Yeah, so, forever.
Yeah. Yeah, so just that gives you some versatility and openness too, because it's probably different needs for different projects.
Yeah, I think so. There's definitely certain things where it's clear that it should be, well, you know, whether it's going to be bass or guitar, and occasionally which bass it'll be. But in general, I mean, I'm really interested in the idea of trying to have, you know, an approach to playing or it's hard to say without it sounding really trite, but just a way of playing music that's kind of honest and having it be malleable enough that you can be that way in whatever musical situation you're in. That, like, to not do the sort of chameleon thing of like, tonight it's a jazz thing and then tomorrow I'll do my rock thing and then the next day I'll do my impression, you know, to just be the same, you know, like the way, I mean, I suppose it would be nice to be that way in the rest of your life too, socially, to be the same with everybody. I mean, of course you make certain adjustments, but to basically just be the same and to not be putting something on to fit or, you know, to just...
Definitely.
So I feel there's a real analogy there with music. Right. I mean, it doesn't always work, of course, but, you know, but to try to... And then to just accept, you know, that there will be situations where I'll play in them and I won't be the right person for it. And that's okay.
Right.
You know, it's no hard feelings. That's fine. That's how
That's how it goes.
Yeah.
And it's better to know that and figure it out than try to struggle on making it fit.
Yeah. And trying to pretend you're something that you're not or do a bunch of stuff that you don't care about just to, I don't know, to show that you can do it or to be employable or something, you know, to just sort of be clear about what's important to you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think that comes across when you play, definitely. Because what I saw is it seems to, you have an amazing ability to listen during the improvised moments. And then when I saw the Trotamouse band play, you seem to have a lot of delight with what your fellow players were doing.
That's good. That's great if that comes across.
I thought so. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, Ingrid's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I had never seen her play before CD release album. So my mind was blown. I was really like,
wow, that's great.
Yeah.
And you had probably seen Matt and Tom play before, had you? Or had you?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. But I hadn't seen her, and I think she might be one of the best sax players I've ever seen. I mean, that's how I was feeling.
Well, sure. I feel the same way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. With all of them, they're so capable, but so kind of unpredictable in a great way. Like, you really, anything could happen, you know? And that's it. Really, like, there's no moment where you can kind of rest on your laurels or anything. It's just, you've no idea what's coming around the corner. But to sort of, for them to be able to have that, but to be so present and engaged with what's happening, is amazing. Like, because sometimes I feel that there can be a thing. I was talking to a friend of mine about this recently, of when people are so technically able, that there can be a feeling of kind of just like, you know, presenting this like mastery of an instrument or a language or something.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's really nice when you hear people who have that, but they're really present and pushing themselves and making themselves very vulnerable. Then I think that's it feels very engaged then to me. So I really love that with the three of them, that they're really walking that line all the time. It feels like, at least.
It does. It does, yeah. Definitely. Yeah, it's beautiful to see and to hear. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a good learning experience for me as well, because if I ever lapse into something that I know I can do, something safe, you know, you because you're surrounded by people that are really pushing themselves, it's a good reminder of, you know, to really not let yourself slip into that kind of mindset, to really stay with the idea or whatever's happening.
Right, right. So they help keep you present. They help keep you listening. And
definitely, yeah. Yeah, because you feel, I would feel really, you know, I'd feel, what's the word? You know, just like being in a social situation, if everybody's being really honest and you're the one person who's not, who's just saying all the stuff you always say, then, you know, that's kind of a bad feeling.
Right,
so
exactly.
So to really try to...
You're relying on a shtick or your old anecdotes or whatever. You're not really being as genuine and present in that moment.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, I think.
Yeah. Have you had a moment when you were touring or doing gigs around Europe and around the U.S. that was really a highlight? Does anything strike you that was just... one of those moments in your life that was like, whoa, you know.
Yeah, definitely. There's been a few. I'm trying to think. I mean, one thing that was really nice late April, early May. I play in this trio with this Belgian drummer, Lander Geiselink. And the trio is called Harrow Peach, and it's with Chris Speed on saxophone.
Oh, fantastic.
And so, you know, like a bunch of musicians here, you know, I've listened to his music for years and years. I'm super inspired by it, and the way everybody in those bands play really affected me a lot, you know. And then at a certain point, I kind of really tried to not listen to it, to not be kind of copying it or something, or trying to copy. So anyway, we were doing this tour, which is a handful of gigs, and we didn't have that many tunes, and so Chris suggested playing some of his tunes from these records like 15 years ago, the YNO records. And there were songs I've re-listened to a lot. And so I kind of felt, oh, it's going to be so hard to do this and not sound like I'm trying to copy my influences.
Right.
But it was a great challenge to just try to do it and try to be yourself doing it. And so anyway, we played them and it was great. It was really, really fun. And he liked it, I think.
Oh, good.
So it was great. It was really kind of, that was a great and exciting feeling to kind of play that music and feel like it was working in a way, you know, where I'm not like just trying to copy somebody else.
Right. You have your fresh take and you were able to dive into it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, not an entirely fresh take or anything, but just, yeah, that was a really inspiring thing to do and to be playing with somebody like Chris, whose music I've admired and been influenced by for a long time.
So yeah, that was so to cool. Have favorite tracks you listen to over and over and all of a sudden you're asked to do them, that is pretty great.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it had been a long time since I'd listened to them, but you know, they're ingrained in there.
Yeah, when there are things that they might have been the soundtrack to your life, you know, for a period, and
yeah,
it's in there.
Yeah, that's always in there. So that was definitely a moment like that. I guess another one was, although it was in New York, was when Jim Black had a week at the Stone, and he asked Jonathan Goldberger and I to play trio with him.
Fantastic.
And that was really, really fun. That felt like a good moment of, you know, a bunch of stuff coming together.
Absolutely.
So that was really nice as well. And there's some more stuff coming up with that band, with Jonathan and Jim, and then with another guitar player, Keisuke Matsuno. And we're going to do one of these, if you know the series that's happening at the Stone, of John Zorn's Bagatelles.
Yeah.
So he wrote these 300 Bagatelles, and then there's a different band leader each week on a Sunday afternoon with a group interpreting eight or ten of them. So
that's,
we're going to do one.
A great opportunity.
Yeah, I'm excited to do that.
So that'll be in December. Do you remember the date?
It's the 27th.
27th.
Yeah.
So yeah. A holiday time. Yeah. At the Stone.
Yeah, we're rehearsing on Christmas Day and doing the gig on the 27th.
That's perfect.
Yeah, that'll be nice.
That sounds really exciting. So you'll be that band, which is an incredible lineup, doing these John Zorn Bagatelles.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I will be there.
Oh, great. Yeah. You're in town for the holidays?
I am. Great. I am. Yeah, because I love Jim. He's just so fun to watch. You know, he's just incredible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else coming down the pipeline that you want to share?
There's a band I play in called Late Bloomer, which is this drummer, Tommy Crane's band. I mean, he's really one of my favorite drummers and composers. And I play guitar in that band. And we recorded about a year and a half ago. And he's been working really hard on mixing it.
So it's in the works. It's going to be coming out.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe it'll come out before the end of the year. But if not, I'd say early in 2016.
Great.
And that's, I think, I really like the album, you know. And it's really, I don't know if it's, maybe it's not a jazz album. But if it's not a jazz album, I'm not sure what it is. It's something.
right. There's some new music. There's not really a word to categorize it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's very accessible.
It's really listenable.
Yeah. Very kind of joyful music, I think. So that's, hopefully that'll be out soon. That's the thing that I'm really excited about.
Excellent. Where did you record it?
We recorded in this studio called White Star in Virginia.
Oh.
A friend of Tommy's works at the studio, and it's a really nice studio. There's a beautiful space downstairs to record, and upstairs you can stay. There's rooms.
That's lovely.
Yeah, so we had a week, and it's on a farm.
Nice.
So there was, like, you know, baby goats and all kinds of things around. It was amazing. And barbecue. Yeah, it was brilliant. That was a nice week.
That's great. That's got to reflect in the playing if you're... in this great environment.
I think definitely, yeah. Not necessarily better or worse, but it's definitely different than, you know, lugging all your gear on the F train and dragging it in somewhere and everybody has to be out by a certain time because they've got a gig that night. And,
you know, exactly.
It was very relaxed in that way. Very limited time and, yeah, definitely. Like the Trotted Mouse record, we had one day.
Wow.
And, but it was fine, actually. But, you know, we were, from the minute we got there to the minute we left, it was action-packed.
Right. Just intensely making sure you get through everything and everything you need.
Yeah.
Gets.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad that record will come out soon. There's a bunch of other things. I play in another band called Glue Gun Optimism.
I love that.
Yeah.
Glue Gun Optimism.
It's this guy, Ed Rosenberg, who's a great saxophone player and composer. He had another band called Jersey Band. And they played around for a long time. They used to dress up in amazing costumes and play this kind of like through composed math rock, all memorized. He's amazing. And this band is kind of, I think it's kind of related to that. Kind of a mixture of math rock and very drony, kind of, I think, North Indian inspired music. So I think there's going to be more stuff coming up with that band because the record came out just a couple of months ago. And that's a really great
record.
Yeah, I like that record.
Nice.
Here is Mirror Layer by Glue Gun Optimism. Oh,
Yeah, when people ask me, I always forget. There's a ton of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, there is. There is. But this is a lot, what you have mentioned already. It's a whole lot. Yeah. Especially the solo project must be really on your mind and engaging you right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's there's definitely a little moment of panic each day.
About that. Yeah, because you're right in the home stretch of about two.
Yeah, the last kind of 5 or 6 days. And the plan is, I think when I come back, that in either December or January, probably January, to maybe try to put together a night of five. I mean, I haven't booked this yet, but I've asked the people that we're going to do it, of 5 or 6 solo performances, that where each performer would do a 20-minute set and then have a 10-minute changeover. And I was thinking that I would play a set, Tommy Crane would play a solo drum set, 20 minutes, and then Greg Chudzik, who is a great bass player who also has a solo electric bass set. And then Matt Nelson, who's a tenor player, has a solo set he does with saxophone and amplifier. He uses a bunch of guitar pedals and manipulates what he does.
Wow.
So I thought, is that 5? I think that's 5. I think that'd be 5.
Yeah, it sounds like an incredible evening.
I think it'd be. And there's one more person that I would love to add, this great percussionist drummer called Satoshi Takeishi. So maybe it would even be 6 if he's around.
Thank you very much. This is fantastic.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Brooklyn Player on Radio Free Brooklyn. Today I interviewed Simon Jerman. He's got a great sound, so if you can see him live, go check him out. In upcoming shows, I'll be speaking to other artists who are on Brooklyn-based label Skrull Records. Thank you so much for listening to Brooklyn Player on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'll say till next time with Otis by Trotta Mouse from the Pictorial Atlas of Mammals album. This was our first show. I'm interested in your comments, so feel free to contact me on Twitter at Veronica Newton. listening to Radio Free Brooklyn.